Hello, my Nutcracker Syndrome besties. We're besties because what a ride, what a ride. This episode I want to speak about. I am a full week post-op from my hernia repair surgery, and this surgery is connected to my autotransplant. I am one of the even rarer, right? Rare as a gemstone, people that developed a hernia. There is obviously research shows that when you have a full open abdominal incision, any open abdominal incision, that you have a higher probability of getting a hernia. In a more recent publication with UC Health, UW Health data, it showed, at least for UW Health, that there was within, so they did the first 30 days and then within a year. And within the year, only one person noted to have a hernia out of a case of 76, I believe was the population number. However, and I'm talking to you as a professor, as somebody who has a PhD, as somebody who does research. This is a whole nother tangent. I very much like, I developed a hernia, but I don't have UW Health calling me be going, "Hey, did you develop a hernia? Did you develop a hernia?" I'm gonna have to reach out to Marcy and say, "Hey, I just need you to know I developed a hernia." Obviously, this isn't y'all's fault. Like, people have predispositions to developing hernias based on your connective tissue, your fascia, et cetera, et cetera. Every time I say fascia, I think of fascism. Interesting. So there's that. But so I don't even know if that number of one out of 76 is even right. There's limitations there because that comes down to, were people reporting, self-reporting to UW Health? Maybe during that time, of course, I'd have to go to look at the methodology to see how they gathered the data. Did they ask those specific questions? But it could have been that some people didn't participate that did have hernias, so they didn't even capture that data. So when I say not only am I rare, as all of us are rare for having Nutcracker syndrome, I am the rarest of them all, if you will, as I bow, clap for me, to not only have Nutcracker syndrome, but to have had a hernia that was developed. So I just had my hernia repair surgery. I'm going to do a whole nother episode on that. Cue that baby up after this one. What I want to talk about in this episode, what I want to talk about in this episode is a little bit of a comparison from the best inpatient experience I had to the worst. This was the worst inpatient experience I had. And it really taught me some things. I wanted to share with you some of the things that I have learned in that experience of it being the worst, so that you can go in as best prepared as you can to be your biggest advocate. Because as we all know, in the Nutcracker syndrome space or any type of rare diagnosis space, let me back up. As we all know, in the American healthcare system, you already have to be your own biggest advocate. If you want to slap a nice little bumper sticker of a rare diagnosis on your ass, then that absolutely means that the advocacy for self has to be turned up on high, full blast the whole time during a time when you don't have the energy to do that. So again, I had my hernia repair surgery this past Monday, October 27th, 2025. Today is actually a week later, Monday, November 3rd, 2025. I got home at 4 a.m. this morning, having to we had to call 911, have an ambulance take me to the hospital because this has been, hands down, the most excruciating pain I've ever experienced. And that is saying a lot, coming from a woman who has had 7 surgeries in 2 years, 8 total surgeries over my life. With the auto transplant being what I thought was going to be the worst pain experience ever. I mean, it's a kidney auto transplant, full open abdominal, 9 days inpatient, the pain meds on pain meds on pain meds. And this surgery has been excruciating. I'm talking about involuntarily screaming out the word fuck more times than I have in my entire life. And I say the word fuck a lot. So what I want to talk about again, the next episode, I'm going to go into more specifics about a hernia, just to let you all know that that's something to look out for if you're having any type of open abdominal surgery. I do know some of the surgeons in America, such as Dr. Zendejas, Dr. Pashak, they do laparoscopic kidney autotransplants. However, they do, one of my friends that's been featured on the show, Kat, had her autotransplant at UC Health, and she did have it done laparoscopically, but they do have to make a kind of a bigger incision, more of a C-section type incision. So it's pretty big on your lower abdomen to be able to get the kidney relocated, do all those things. Whether, even with a lesser, a robotic surgery, there's still the chance. It's a lot lower, of course, to get a hernia. But let's talk inpatient. And I want to be, in my last episode, I talked about cloaking ourselves in empathy. And I really always want to emphasize this. I'm on Dilaudid at the time of this recording, so I'm feeling good right now. My pain's at bay, and I needed it to be at bay so that I could talk to you all. And I think it's really important too for me, from a lived experience, to record these episodes as close to the date of happenings going on, to really capture the raw, real experience of it, because that's important. And I think from your end as the audience member, you listening to that raw, real experience, is more validating rather than me coming at it as a professor just giving you a nice little PowerPoint lecture. Now, I went into this surgery. Kyle and I actually joked after my auto transplant. I had a septoplasty and turbinate reduction this past summer, so a couple months ago. And then I had this hernia repair just this past week. And mostly the reason why, I knew my body, I was really putting it through the ringer doing three surgeries in a year. But I also had my out-of-pocket max and deductible met in April. And your woman is resourceful. Your woman is a thrift store shopper. And I do the same thing when it comes to surgeries. Like, if that deductible and out-of-pocket max is met, send me to all the specialists, because I'm gonna take insurance for all the money it's worth for all the shit it's put me through, as you all maybe have listened to in the last episode. However, what was interesting, Kyle and I would always laugh that these surgeries, like the septoplasty, turbinate reduction, this hernia repair, spa days. Give me a pedicure, baby. Because again, the kidney autotransplant, if you tell anybody that, it's like, oh, of course that's going to take the cake. There's no way any other surgery would be more painful. And that is some, there's, I was actually looking into the research, and I was talking to my gynecologist, Dr. Muldoon, this morning in our follow-up appointment, and she confirmed this. There is research that actually shows when you are inpatient, and if you've had an open abdominal versus a laparoscopic surgery, nurses' implicit and probably explicit bias will listen to the patients who have the open abdominal procedure and the wound more when it comes to pain management, and they will attend to them more versus those who have laparoscopic surgeries. I'm going to take that right there, that research, and give you a live case. By me. I'm the live case here. Okay. That's what this whole, podcast is about. And to juxtapose that, to actually, like, when I was in at UW Health inpatient for my kidney autotransplant surgery, I was there for 9 days. My pain management that they provided me was an epidural, of which I found out they don't offer that to everybody, of which I think that is criminal that they don't. That's also for another day. I was inpatient for 9 days. I had my epidural in. They couldn't, for the first day and a half, actually use the epidural medicine. It starts with an R. It's not Robaxin. I'm so that's a muscle relaxer, but it's starts with an R because my blood pressure was so low. So for the first day and a half, I didn't get the benefit of the epidural, but I did have my pain pump, and they started the epidural. Day five, they take the epidural out. I'm still hooked to my pain pump. And then around like day six, seven, they take the pain pump away to make sure that I can stomach, handle oral opioids so that I could then transition into being discharged and going to the Airbnb. So my inpatient experience at UW Health, and I think there's another episode kind of in the queue of, it was amazing. It was magical. It was spiritual. It was fairy-like. It was. You created, like, it was this time warp of a space where you forget what day it is, what time it is, and you become besties with your nurses, and even those nurses that you maybe didn't click with right off the bat, there was this genuine level of care. But again, I was a patient who had a full open abdominal from my sternum down to my pubic bone, cut open. like a filleted fish, flopping on the operating room table. And so I was going into this surgery, this hernia repair surgery, which this transplant team, which isn't my original transplant team in at UW Health in Madison, Wisconsin, it was here in Denver. I was referred to another transplant team. You will also find out once you get a transplant, you are treated way differently in the medical community. Even though this is an auto transplant, it's my organ. They're no immunosuppressants, the whole thing. You're doing both sides of a transplant too. Like, come on, what makes you more transplant than a transplant patient? Not to compare, you know, I know there's other nuances, of course, but that's a whole nother rabbit hole I can go down because insurance doesn't classify a, or at least mine doesn't classify a kidney auto transplant as a classic transplant, so you don't get the same benefits as a transplant patient. I digress. But I was at UW Health and fairy-like experience, spiritual phoenix moment of my life. Tarot cards were out, crystals were out, stargazing things were, y'all saw those photos, were being projected onto the walls. You know, hallucinations were happening because I was on so much Dilaudid. Then this surgery, this hernia repair here out of Denver, I was referred to a transplant center for them to do my transplant. And this was at Advent Health Porter. And again, I don't want to necessarily something again, I said something earlier about cloaking ourselves in empathy. There's a lot we don't know. Okay, so I'm about to share my lived experience at Advent Health Porter at their inpatient facility. We don't know if it's administrative, right? Like these nurses, they might be so understaffed that this story is influenced by that. They might have a shitty boss, right? So none of this is a, I really want us to be meta here. I really want us to take a macro approach, and I want us to cloak ourselves in empathy at all times as best we can. That doesn't mean that there's not going to be justified anger and rage, but we are accountable for how we respond and react when we do have those feelings. So I'm going in, I have my initial consult with my surgeon, and he's like, yeah, you know, you really need to fix this. It's definitely a large hernia, and if we don't fix it, it could get larger and turn into an open surgery, whole deal. He said, I'm going to keep you inpatient for a day just because of your medical history. Your guts have been poked. They don't like that shit. And he was nervous that because of all the surgeries I've had that my digestive tract wouldn't turn back on. And so I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I'm actually kind of excited about it. I'm not gonna lie. Like, my inpatient experience at UW Health was a slumber party. I felt like I was back in middle school, just giggling, cackling, gossiping. I mean, the whole thing. Like, just again, shout out to Tessa, shout out to my nurses. They just made it such a healing space for me emotionally, right? They weren't there stare. So I'm thinking, sign me up for inpatient, right? Like I get a day, you know, Kyle gets his own space. We live in a 500 square foot cabin with an outhouse. Like he gets to, you know, we're on top of each other all the time, you know, and then I get a slumber party with some cool people. And that was not it. That is not what happened at all. I was also told, like, yeah, you know, I've heard from other people who've had hernia repair surgeries. They're like, yeah, it's not so bad. And my surgeon didn't say anything about how awful it was going to be. So again, as some of you know, I'm a sports psychology professor, okay? And I love to mentally prepare for things, right? It's what I do with my clients. I help clients mentally prepare for competition, for stressful situations. So I'm thinking I prepared to the degree I felt like I needed to prepare. And I didn't prepare enough because I went and had this surgery. It was a joint procedure with my gynecologist and the transplant surgeon. Gynecologist went in, she did some endometriosis excision. There was some found. She excised it, kind of looked around for some other shit. Then walks in, transplant surgeon. He proceeds to do the hernia surgery. And I wake up, I remember waking up in excruciating pain. Like couldn't breathe deeply, like just very felt very suffocated. And they were wheeling me back to my inpatient room and I was like, give me pain meds, give me whatever. And so they did, and it really wasn't touching anything. Any movement I made, If I even thought about lifting my head, it was just piercing, shooting pains in the incisions where the hernia repair happened. So it's right on top of my lower ribs. It truly felt like they either fractured my ribs or broken them. I will report, I went to the ER by ambulance last night. They did a CT. There was no report of broken bones. Okay. So, but that's what it feels like, right? I'm not saying the surgeon did that, but it does. I have broken my bones snowboarding before, and there's a bit of a correlation, a strong effect size there, if you will, in my book. So that's what it was feeling like. And I'm inpatient, okay? And I'm thinking, okay, well, all I got to do is call the nurse call button. Nurse call button was my best friend when I was at UW Health. And when I was in there, I would call the nurse, press the nurse call button, and somebody would answer, and I'd say, hey, my pain's really bad, or can somebody come help me do this? They'll be like, absolutely, I'll call your nurse, they'll be right in. Now, that right there, I heard, I don't know how many times, I'll call your nurse, they'll be right in. The be right in part, that's very subjective for them, I guess. I felt like in my lived experience, in my world, a lot of people who say, like, be right there, give me a second, like, I mean, we might bleed into 30 seconds, right? That's cool. But it would be 45 minutes to an hour before they would even arrive to give me my pain meds. And so what happened in this inpatient excursion was really actually traumatic. And I've already reached out to Barbara, my therapist, for us to dilly-dally through this little mental health space. Because I would call, so in at UW Health, if I called the nursing line, they'd be in there in 5 minutes, sometimes 10. If they were, it got to the point that if they were a little late at UW Health, I knew something was legit going on, right? At Advent Health, it was almost every time I'd press my nurse call button, they were, especially if it's pain management related, it was like, not every time it was 45 to 60 minutes, but there was a handful of times it was 45 to 60 minutes. And as everybody knows in the chronic pain world and just in the medical space in general, the one thing you do not want to do is chase your pain. Something else I'm going to hit y'all with right now. And again, I'm a professor, I'm a researcher. So let's bring that paper publications in. There is research out there that demonstrates that if you do not control your pain well at the beginning of a procedure, that you have a higher probability of developing neural pathways that will contribute to chronic pain post-operatively, to where you can then have chronic pain after, even when the pain of the surgery leaves. And I'm aware of this, right? I know way too much for my own good. I know enough, I will say, to really piss off doctors that don't like being challenged. And I love that. I love going in. I love rattling the feathers, as a mid-30-year-old, really intelligent lady. That's also kind of attractive. And then I come in and like hit them, and I'm like, well, actually, what you just said is not true. So here I am chasing the pain the entire time I'm inpatient, and they're not coming in. For those who've never been inpatient, you can't just get out of your bed and go get your meds. They're behind a locked door. The nurse has to go get them. They have to have somebody like watch them take the meds out. There's a whole thing. So I feel like I'm being held captive. I literally feel like I'm in a straitjacket. Like I can't do anything. Something else is that, again, Kyle wasn't there with me. I actually really like my inpatient time by myself, or at least that's how UW Health was, because it was a time of reflection. I had my journal, I had my tarot cards, I had all my woo-woo-y things to really just like suck the spiritual life out of that experience and take away what I needed to from that moment. And that none of that was what this was. This was just pure survival and just like, even though I don't pray anymore, like begging somebody to be like, can you send these people in? Or because I was 100% relying on these people who felt like were majorly neglecting me. And so I would call back multiple times. Hey, the nurse hasn't come in. I'm past my medication. And they're like, well, I let them know they're coming. They're coming. They're probably with another patient. So what I did, again, I thought, well, if they're going to be 45, 60 minutes late, what I'm actually going to do is call 45 to 60 minutes earlier. So then I can actually get my pain meds on time. That sounds rational, right? That sounds like that makes sense. But then I would call and be like, hey, I'm due for my pain meds. And they would just be like, well, it's not yet. Call back when it's time. And I'm like, well, I'm calling because there's always usually a delay. And then when I say that, there's like a defensiveness on the other line, right? Like I'm accusing them of something, which I am. How about you take accountability, right? Another thing too is when I was at UW Health, it was so nice. Like nurses are more than just nurses. They are like true, they're like caterers. They are everything. They're all encompassing. They wear a million hats. They are angels. My UW Health experience, I was like, I've always known a lot of my friends are nurses. I respect them. There's a reason why they're my friends. But I saw a different glimpse of nurses, and I really loved that I saw that because it helped me to empathize and really understand my friends more. Like I was able to be like, man, like tell me about your worst experience. They're like running around, they're housekeeping, they're the whole thing. Well, then at AdventHealth, so UW Health, they would always bring me my pain meds on time. I didn't have to call them. They had their own, like, okay, Simone gets her meds at 2 p.m. every day, like these meds, and then she'll get them every 4 hours. They had their own alarm clocks. At AdventHealth, I didn't know that. I thought that was normal, that they're supposed to come in like when they're supposed to come in, and they didn't do that. So that was another reason why I got behind the pain, because I didn't realize I had to call every single time I was supposed to have. And I asked about that. I was like, are you like, what is, what's the, I remember asking this one guy, I was also pretty doped out of my mind. I said, what's the deal here? Like, I said, what is our relationship like? I said, are you supposed to bring me the medication when it's time, or am I supposed to keep up with that? And I really wanted to say, or am I supposed to do your job? I wish I would have, but like, I wasn't, I needed one more oxy in me. I needed one more Percocet to say that. Because you don't want to, you also don't want to piss them off, right? Like, what are they going to do? Hock a loogie in your oxys? That'd be disgusting. They wouldn't do that, I'm sure. But you just don't know, right? Like, when you go to McDonald's and you might get a little bit of an attitude, you're like, you know, they're jizzing in your McDouble. And so, I don't know, you just have, there's that like that irrational fear in the back of your mind of like, well, I don't want to be mean to these people because they, I literally have to, like, they, ha I have to, they need, I need them. I need them. I need them. I can't piss them off. And I also, oh, the whole like, I don't want to be labeled as a difficult woman because if they're already waiting 45 to 60 minutes to bring me my meds, God, if I was labeled a difficult woman, so they would come in and be like, hey, how's your night? You know, doing that whole bullshit narrative, blah, blah, just to hopefully maybe get my main pain meds 5 minutes earlier than the delay. Like, so he says, he goes, we know you have to call us to come and give you your pain meds. And I was just like, then why didn't you fucking tell me that in the beginning? Also, why? I'm over here in excruciating pain. Okay. Why do I have to be the one that calls you? Why am I doing your job? Also, what's funny is I don't actually know, you're not writing anything on the whiteboard of when the next time my pain meds are supposed to be. That's interesting. There's also a spot on the whiteboard that says, when is the next time your pain meds are supposed to be? And only one person the last day, it was like I was about to be discharged in a couple hours. And it was this new nurse that came in. She wasn't even my nurse. She wrote down. And I was like, interesting. So they are supposed to do that, I guess. So I would have to say, okay, before you leave, I know you're busy, blah, 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 like affirming the fact that they're so busy. I was like, can you let me know, like, when is my next dose of like Percocet? When's my next dose of Tylenol? When's my next dose of Robaxin? When's my next all this shit? So I had to go in my phone. I'm trying to get sleep here. I had to set alarms, the whole thing. And then I'd have to call the nurse line. And that was another thing is the times where I was like, well, I'll just call 45 minutes to an hour early so they can get here on time that point. But then in the middle of the night, when I'm actually trying to fucking sleep and I have to wait on my alarm and then I'm having to call to get the medicine and then it doesn't come in time and then the pain's getting so bad and then I can't get back to sleep. And then by that point, I'm having to like emergency call and say, this pain is so fucking horrific. Can I get more? And they're like, well, no, you're not due for your next. I just need a moment of silence. I got worked up. I'm starting to hurt. I'm starting to hurt. My incisions are starting to hurt. Because they're talking. They're mad too. They're pissed. These are some of the things I learned I wanted to talk to you about. I was speaking with my friend Kat, who's been featured on this episode a lot, another Nutcracker bestie that I've made on this journey. I met her on the Facebook group. We are now like two peas in a little pod. I called her to kind of go over my inpatient experience. I was like, I Man, I feel like I'm about to start crying even thinking about this. I remember telling her, I said, I don't know what just happened. I said, but I just feel like I was abused. Like I was, again, I was like, if it felt like I was strapped down to my bed because I couldn't move. I was in so, anytime I would move, like you have your bed that you can like move the head up, of course, and like the legs up and down and everything. But even when I would do that and try to prop myself up as much as I could, even trying to get out of bed was just so, so excruciating painful. I mean, it was just like, I'd be like, fuck, 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 fuck. So I felt like I was literally strapped down on this bed, couldn't go anywhere, and begging for these people to come in, almost as if I was like, please bring me my food and just leave it on a tray, you know, like, because I was in so much pain and I was chasing the pain and it just made me crazy in my brain and I just didn't know what to do. I felt so helpless and I didn't have Kyle there. And I was talking to Kat about this because we were, you know, she knows about my UW health experience being amazing, other than this one nurse that's kind of a funny story, yelling at me for leaving some of my Christmas wrapping paper on the floor and bleh. I was talking to Kat about it. I was like, man, I literally had both ends of the spectrum for my inpatient. I had, you know, my great, amazing, you know, Phoenix spiritual experience at UW Health. And I just had my like depths of hell dungeons, you know, like straitjacket in a jail experience is what it felt like. I mean, truly. And when you're in it, you're trying to survive. When you're in it, you're trying to just be like understanding. So again, I do want to say, like, you know, cloaking myself with empathy, there's a lot of things I don't know. I don't see behind the scenes. Like, are they understaffed? Are they like, what's going on? You know, what's the administration like? Are they taking care of their people? I mean, there's so much there, okay? And I don't want to get into the tit for tat for that. I'm not trying to dilly-dally in that space because again, if anything a PhD taught me is I know a lot about a very, 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 very small subject in the universe. And so there's so much behind the scenes I don't know. So this isn't a pointing fingers. This isn't, you know, I'm not going to serve myself getting mad at. I did speak to Dr. Muldoon this morning about what was the most productive, meaningful thing I could do. And she's going to send me a patient advocate email. For me to be able to speak to them, I want to make sure I write it in a very professional, non-attacking way, of course. I want to have peer-reviewed research in there that supports my claims on why I'm asking for this. But I was constantly chasing the pain in there, and Kat and I were speaking about how when she was inpatient, her husband and her mom were there constantly, and how that acted as a massive buffer because they were there as witnesses, and I didn't have a witness. You know, I just had, they could easily be like, well, you were doped up. You don't remember what the experience was like, right? And I didn't have Kyle there. And for some, I just want to say this, like in my situation, I couldn't. Kyle couldn't get off work. And in a way, I actually didn't. Again, I had a great UW Health experience. I wanted my slumber party. I wanted my time by myself. So I didn't even think twice about it. I wasn't like, oh no, I need you there to protect me. But I just want to share the realities of, like, again, my UW health experience, full open abdominal. Interesting how I got like bedside, red carpet, just amazing palm leaves, grapes being fed to me. And then this one was a laparoscopic surgery with, you know, five, you know, I wouldn't say small. I mean, they're probably 2 centimeters in size. And it was shitty. Now, do I have the research to support that? No. I don't have any data to be able to plug into SPSS to say, yeah, actually, they were, you know, being implicitly, explicitly biased towards you because it was laparoscopic. I can't make that claim, right? And that's really important here. It's very important that we don't necessarily jump to claims that are being made of like, oh, this happened and it's because of this, right? Somebody told me they were like, aren't you mad at like, you know, UW Health that you, well, you know, they developed a hernia? What did the surgeon do wrong? I was like, they didn't do anything wrong. I'm right. Like they did what they were supposed to do. My incision looks great. There's a million other people. Not really a million. Let's be, that's stupid. This is so rare and nobody knows about it. There is a handful of people running around with the same scars I have, right? That aren't going to develop a hernia. So, But again, a lot of people want to find somebody to blame, and I want us to untether ourselves from that. And what I really just want us to do is take a step back and for me to give you some things that you could potentially mitigate, you can speak with your support system about for y'all to come up with the best game plan necessary. One of those is having somebody present. They can advocate for you when you're in a lot of pain. They can go outside and say, "Where the fuck is the nurse at? It is 45, 60 minutes late. This is not okay." They can say, "Can I talk to a charge nurse? Can I talk to a manager?" I couldn't do that. I mean, I could have actually been like, "Can I talk to a manager?" However, again, I'm the only one there. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. I don't want him to hawk a loogie in my oxys. So I'm like, really just trying to do the best I can on my own while also being in pain and navigating that, crying because of a bunch of other trauma that's coming up. And so have somebody there with you. Talk to the, if I would have known, I would have asked the surgeon prior, like, what's the inpatient experience like? How much can I actually depend on the fact that they're going to bring me my pain meds when they need to bring me my pain meds? So more pointed questions about the inpatient experience. If the surgeon doesn't know, can you please connect me with somebody that I can speak with about this? Because it's very important. One thing Kat and I would speak about is she did a really good job. She did something I didn't do, and I learned from her for this. She actually wrote out her preferred pain management plan and gave it to the transplant coordinator at UC Health to pass on, to give to the inpatient people, to say, "This is what I want and this is what I consent to. This is my body." And she gets a call back being, basically calling her a difficult woman. "Well, I don't know, they're not used to people being," and it's like, I don't give a shit if they're used to people being. This is my body. I know how it operates. And so that's something I wish I would have done too, is, written those letters, had a pain management plan, like wrote it out, been like, these are the pain meds I would like inpatient. This is like, the dose, like what I've done prior that's been preferred dosing. If you don't actually know what those baselines are for you, speak to the doctor about that. Ask him what his post-op pain management is going to be. What happens? Something I haven't asked, but I'm 100% going to start asking this. What happens if that pain management plan doesn't actually work and I'm still chasing the pain? You can find out real quick if they're a surgeon who actually cares to do your post-op pain management or not. Because if they're like Dr. Muldoon, for example, she's great. She's always like, "Yeah, if we do that, then I'll do this. I'll send this in. Don't you worry. Like, there's no reason you should be in pain." There's also so much research, and I teach this in my psychology of injury and rehabilitation course for both sports, for both athletes, and for just clients in general. The discriminatory, the medical bias literature on how men, obviously, when it comes to pain, they have a higher probability of being prescribed pain meds, and not only prescribed pain meds, but prescribed a higher quantity of pain meds. Women, on the other hand, are not as believed. And if they are prescribed pain meds, it's at a lower quantity. Or before they'll prescribe them, they're going to sit there and give you a whole spiel on, the psychosomatic connection, and maybe it's in your head. And are you sure you're not just hysterical? Are you sure you're not just hysterical? Are you sure you don't need to just have an orgasm? That might help things. That's the shit they would do back in the day. Back in what, the 1700s? I don't even know. So there's a lot of intersectionality going on here. There's a lot, for example, your race. So we bring an intersectionality here. So yeah, maybe you're a woman, you're a black woman. Black women are, I mean, just black individuals in general, it's pain. They are believed to have a higher pain tolerance. Now, we're bringing in some generational trauma here, and I'm just gonna say it about slavery, right? Well, if they could handle, nobody's gonna say it, right? Like a white person is gonna say it. Well, if they can handle the pain from slavery and all their family, like they came from painful backgrounds, so they can handle, they have a higher tolerance for pain. Whereas white individuals are, the bias is that they don't have as high of a tolerance for pain. So a white person, again, will have a higher probability of getting prescribed the pain meds as well as a higher quantity, whereas black people will have to struggle to get the pain management prescription as well as get a lower quantity of meds. Intersect that baby with being a black woman, yippee-ki-yay. Intersect that with being a black lesbian, black transgender woman, right? Like, There is so the more ticks you have against you, as we know societally, the medical system is a microcosm, baby. Same thing's going to happen there. So much, you know, this podcast, for example, let me even go and look at these analytics, babe. Like, they are, gosh, I got 5 plays in the last 30 days. Hell, okay, I'm just joking. Let me look at the demographics here. Like, the audience I'm looking at, so wow, 100% are in the 23 to 27, eight, oh, that's in the last 30 days. Let me go to all time. I was like, that doesn't make sense. We have a large, the biggest percentage that we have is 23 to 27 years old. And then the next, which is like 1.5% lower than that, 28 to 34. And then after that, 35 to 44. Then we're looking, if we look at gender, 73% of the population that listens to this. And there's some, you know, there's some nuances there. It could be that women are more likely to listen to podcasts. Women are more likely to listen to podcasts hosted by women. I don't know. We do have some males. I see males out there, 26.2% represent. We have a 0.6% non-specified. So, you know, a lot in the United States. We got some in Canada. Hello, Australia, Ireland, United Kingdom. The list goes on. So I want to validate, in the sense of like, we have the population of people here that are mostly women. And so the game we have to play on a role playing in the middle of us also being in pain. And so this week, basically what happened, and again, this next episode that we'll get to will be more specifically about the hernia. I want to prepare you all. I want to give you my lived experience. I want to be, again, raw and real, whether it's talking about how horrendous this pain has been. So for this whole last week, 7 days, I have been chasing my pain. I have called the nursing line with the transplant unit, and they're just like, there's nothing we can do. Go to the ER. There's nothing we can do. And I'm just like, I don't know. That just sounds like, first of all, where's the doctor on call? That's who I want to talk to. So last night the pain got so bad. Last night being November 2nd, we ended up having to call an ambulance. Kyle, lumberjack of a man, Kyle, couldn't even move me. I was in excruciating pain. The ambulance comes. They pump me with more pain meds than I've ever been given, which was nice. I was able to sleep in my body. Oh, I was crying in the hospital. Legitimately, I was thanking everybody. And I just started crying. I was like, I can't tell you how tired my body is. My body is so tired of fighting. And to just be able to have this relief and for them to have listened to me and to understand, like, oh, it was just wonderful. They were so supportive. I even, so serendipitously, I have to share this with you all. Again, by ambulance, I go to St. Anthony's and go in. Everybody's wonderful. They get me in a room. They push some more pain meds. They push some Robaxin, some muscle relaxers, some Zofran, which was great. And then they said, okay, we're going to do some blood tests and then we're going to take you back for a CT, like standard ER stuff. So they do the blood work. All of that actually came back fairly okay, you know, nothing like life or death. And they then, a man comes into my room. His name's Jeff, I believe, and takes me back to do my CT. A very kind man. We're kind of starting to chat. They put me on the CT, and I always tell the individuals that are doing my scans, hey, don't be alarmed. I have both of my kidneys on the right side of my body. And then they just always kind of either the reactions are interesting. And this one guy came out and kind of giggled. And then he said, he goes, oh. And he was like, thanks for letting us know. And they come out and they take me out of the CT and they go, why are both of your kidneys on here, if you don't mind me asking? I was like, well, have you ever heard of something called Nutcracker syndrome? And the guy's, it was like his face, like his jaw just drops. He's like, oh my gosh, my wife right now is struggling and we think that's what she has. And I was like, get me a post-it note, write down my cell phone number. Here's my name. Here's the podcast. Here's the Facebook group you can join. Because we all know how scary, how lonely it is to get a diagnosis that's so rare. I would even say 99% of the medical community doesn't know about it. That doesn't feel great, right? There's nobody else around you. You kind of have doctors that are just like throwing noodles at the wall. And you're talking about your body, your life, and they're throwing noodles at the wall. I don't know. Doesn't really feel great. So I got to meet him. He was sharing some of her story. I'm just sitting there shaking my head up and down. I'm like, listen, please have her call me. Please have her text me. I have been through the whole rigmarole. I have vetted doctors. I know who she should go to in the Denver area, who she should not go to for sure. And let me help her, like truly. Like, I am so passionate about this. And it's why I'm doing these episodes, right? This isn't to, some of it is my own coping mechanism for me to share my story. And it's nice to be able to feel like I'm sharing my story in a way that can be helpful to others. So that felt serendipitous to like finally agree, be like, I need to go. I have a hard time just agreeing that the I need to go. We also all mostly have pretty bad relationships with the ER because, your labs are normal, everything's fine when it's not at all. So I really didn't want to go. And Kyle just looked at me, he was like, you need to go. And so I go and I meet him, and it felt very serendipitous that I could be there and be like, okay, if I wouldn't have come, not that this individual wouldn't have been able to find the help that she needs, but it just felt good. It felt like there was a connection, a little universe wink. But if you're doing inpatient, very much recommend there be a lot of questions around inpatient. I would go as far as to say, can you give me the contact person of the charge nurse on the inpatient floor? Let me talk to him. I would encourage you to have somebody there with you, maybe not at all times, but most times. I would encourage you to write out a pain management plan, maybe working with your primary care doctor, maybe working with the surgeon that you're with, and go ahead and have that written in black and white and send it to somebody at the hospital. You think they're going to think you're too much? Who gives a shit, right? They already think we're too much. So let's play the role. Let's give them what they want. Ask your surgeon about post-op medication and how they help you manage. Okay, well, let's talk worst case scenario. What if my pain isn't being managed by that? Where's the next place to go? Kind of help me understand what are the different avenues that you take. What happens if we don't have my pain controlled within the first day? What happens with discharge? What happens when I get home and the pain gets really bad? What happens if I get through all my pain meds and I need to call and ask for more? Are you I might not ask it this way, but you can if you want. Are you stingy? Are you not going to give me more pain meds? Are you not going to believe that I'm still in pain? Are you going to treat me like I'm a pill seeker? Like what? So all of those things I just wanted to, they were things looking back that I didn't know I needed to do. And I hope through my really awful traumatic experience that I'm now have to going to take money and throw into mental health, into psychiatry to overcome that. I'm really hoping to maybe mitigate it for some of you so that you feel empowered when you go in to have feel like you were prepared and you have as good of a inpatient plan as possible and proper communication is had with all individuals. And I think by proper communication, I mean there's a lot of miscommunication between departments. So like I don't really feel like Dr. or my surgeon, the transplant surgeon, was really talking at all to the people on the floor about pain management. I don't really feel there was like felt like there was a huge disconnect, a huge disconnect. So again, you have to advocate to make sure there isn't a disconnect. You have to advocate to make sure that every party that is involved in your post-operative care knows what the game plan is. And if they don't, you have it on record. You have it in black and white that that's what you've requested. And if they deny you that pain management care, as long as you're not asking for, let me, deep throat seven Dilaudids at 500 milligrams a piece, right? Like that's insane. As long as you're not asking for something like that, then if they're not giving that to you, then there's some steps you can take beyond that to hold them accountable. Okay. Again, that's not, I'm not necessarily in a place right now. I'm not saying some of you might be like, well, what are you going to do, Simone? Are you going to hold them accountable? Yeah, I'm going to hold them accountable. I'm going to write a very well written letter from the perspective of me being a professor. I'm going to put peer reviewed research in there so them bitches can't sit there and be like, oh, this is just somebody complaining, so that it can be educational in nature. And I'm hoping that's going to then make a point. I'm going to follow up then with the charge nurse and be like, hey, have you all received this? It's really important to me. Not only for my own sake, but for other people, to be able to, we don't deserve to be in pain. Life's already hard enough. Our diagnoses are already hard enough. So for any extra pain that's not actually needed and can't be managed, that's excess. That's not okay in my eyes. And we all should be able to be as pain-free as possible, especially coming out of a surgery. Anyways, I could go on. I hope this episode has helped you in the juxtaposition of both my lived experiences of like my great lived experience at UW Health, and maybe the reason why was because it was an open abdominal. My awful experience at Advent Health Porter, maybe it was because it wasn't open abdominal, it was just laparoscopic, so they downplayed my pain. I don't know. I don't have the data to support that. Does it feel that way? Absolutely. Am I going to go to them and I'm going to say like that's 100% correlation with a strong effect size? No. Now, but I do think that this is information that you can use to inform yourself, to go in again, cloak yourself with empathy first, but then to go in and be able to have a good plan. And then so when you go under, you are very aware that when you wake up that you are being taken care of. Something I wish I would have advocated more for. I even said this to my transplant surgeon. I said, my pain was so bad when he came in day two. And I was like, gosh, I'll be honest with you. I was like, they're not really bringing me my pain medication in time. Can I get a pain pump? And he's like, well, let's just see. Let's just see. And then there was never any follow-up on it. So again, I was being held captive. I wasn't even allowed to get a pain pump, or there was no further talks about it. It was more just like, you know, I remember the anesthesiologist speaking to them about post-operative pain. And I was like, yeah, you know, I had an epidural for my transplant surgery. She was like, and I didn't even say, can I get that for this? She was like, well, that would be overkill for the surgery. I was like, well, yeah, of course. At that time, I didn't think the surgery would be that bad. Looking back, if I would have known this pain would have been this bad, I would have looked at that anesthesiologist and said, that is not at all overkill. It's what I'm requesting. And if you do not give it to me, then I'm going to absolutely kick and scream. Because if there was anything I needed for the surgery, it was that epidural. 100%. I would have rather have given up the epidural for my kidney auto transplant and dealt with that pain than this pain. This pain has been 20 times worse than the kidney auto transplant pain. Even when they took the epidural off, even when they took me off the pain pump, I never once had this piercing pain. And you could argue, like, well, that's what the epidural was for the first 5 days. Like, yeah, sure. Anyways, I'm going on a little bit of a tangent. I hope you find benefit in this. I'm going to be recording the next episode just regarding the hernia to talk about that as a possibility for some of us that do the kidney auto transplant, so that you can have that in your back pocket. But before we leave, as I always like to do, let's just take a moment to recenter ourselves into this space, right? Like whether this episode, it's riled me up, baby. Like I'm ready to flip a table and I can't lift anything above 8 pounds right now. So if it's riled you up, if you're frustrated with whatever's happened today, let's just take a moment to reconnect with ourselves, reconnect with our breath. Let's take that big inhale in through our nose and then slowly exhale at your own pace. Feeling more grounded in this moment. Another deep inhale. And then an exhale. Continuing that with that cycle for as long as you need for you to feel at peace. I just want you to know I'm proud of you. You should be proud of yourself for advocating. I am here for you. It's why, 100% why I'm recording these episodes. Is to help you for us to be a community and know that you're not alone. So I wish you well as you go into the rest of your day.